Okay. Good morning, everyone. I hope you're well. First, we have a little bit of leftover from last week, and then we're going to start this week's topic. So, in terms of last week, of course, we were discussing the hardening of Paro's heart, and Paro's loss of freedom. Generally, the concept of free will and the idea of tshuva. I'd like to, first of all, we finished last week with a discussion about Lev Malachim Biyad Hashem, the idea that HaKadosh Baruch Hu controls the hearts of kings and the like. I think that those of you following the news this week, I certainly found myself thinking about that a lot with the release of the peace plan in Eretz Yisrael. You know, everything that Israelis more or less have been asking for 50 years. You know, I think if 5 years ago someone told you that the Americans would suggest a police plan along these lines, anybody would have said that's a nace. Forget a nace nister, a nace nigla. And generally speaking, the events of these events are, I believe, very much an incredible reflection of Lev Malachim Biyad Hashem. I don't know where it's going to end up. I don't know what's going to be. I don't know what's going to be in the elections, here, there. I don't know anything. But certainly to take note of the incredible times that we're in the Hashgacha and, you know, what seems really to be direction, as we talked about last week, is certainly worth noting. A clarification, you know, I guess just a couple of clarifications that from questions that were asked at the end of Shir last time, after Shir was over. But so one is somebody asked, when we talked about the appointment of, Rehavam's decision not to lower the taxes, and therefore the splitting of the king, and we gave that as an illustration of Lev Malachim Biyad Hashem. Someone said, where do you see that in the psukim? So that's because we didn't read the most important psukim, pasuk related to this point. If you look at your makaros from last week, the very last pasuk, which is bolded from Malachim Aleph Perek Yud Beis, Lo shama melech el ha'am ki aisa siba me'im Hashem leman hakimes devaro asher diber Hashem biyad achia shiloni al Yeravam ben Nevat. So the pasuk emphasizes that what was really behind this decision was that it was a siba me'eis Hashem. It was something that was guided and directed from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So that was one point. Earlier in the Ramban, we also talked about how the Ramban, on the one hand, does maintain that Hashem involved himself in Paro's decision-making, especially in the final plagues. He was involved and controlling of Paro in some degree. But at the same time, we said how he also preserved Paro's freedom, in so far as he gave him the strength to do what he really wanted to do. There was a additional point which I neglected to emphasize, but emerges from the Ramban. If you just take a look back at the Ramban, at his Lashon, which is the bottom of page 1, so we'll just read the Lashon again. V'atam asheni ki hayu chetzi amakos alav bepish'o, So what the Ramban, I think, is telling us is something very interesting, which is Hashem preserved or allowed Paro to choose between right and wrong. The ultimate freedom, the ultimate important bechira, is the ability to choose between right and wrong. What was right over here? L'shalcham l'kvod Hashem. What was wrong over here? To keep them. The choice that he took away was to release them because his arm was twisted, right? Because of COVID hamakos. But fundamentally, the choice between right and wrong was something that was always preserved. And this is an idea that a number of Mefarshim, among them, for example, the Radak, express. The Radak says that though Hashem might sometimes intervene in a person's decision-making, or perhaps especially a king's decision-making, the ability to choose right or wrong is always maintained. In the case of Paro, the right choice was to free the Jews, l'kavod Hashem, and that was maintained. If he wanted to do what was right at any point throughout the whole saga, he could have done that. Just an illustration of that, the Radak, as I said, uses this idea in a number of places in Navi. One example is the story of the B'nai Eli. It says over there that Hashem seemingly intervened and prevented them from doing tshuva. And the Radak is medayek in the psukim that what the psukim mean is that Hashem, they had the option, the opportunity to do tshuva shlema if they wished to. The option that Hashem took away from them is to sort of do a fake tshuva. Fake tshuva would have been a chol Hashem because, you know, they get up, they make a press conference, oh, you know, we regret the things that we did. We know that they weren't befitting of us. You know, maybe they'd even shed a tear or two. And then since it was totally fake, so they would be punished. And everybody would say, you know, what's going on over here? This isn't fair. They did tshuva, and yet they're getting punished. So the pshat is that, again, they had the choice to do right, to do tshuva shlema, or to do wrong, not to do tshuva. The option taken away was another variation of what was wrong, fake tshuva, because of the chil Hashem that would have entailed. Just like with respect to Paro, he had the option to do right, to free the Jews, l'chvod Hashem, to do wrong, refuse to free them. That middle option of to free them because of COVID amakos was taken away. But ultimately, the most important sense of freedom, namely right versus wrong, is always maintained. That's an idea that also, I think, emerges from the Ramban, as well as the Radak and other thinkers. There's two more approaches to this question that we didn't get to last time that we're just going to, again, mention very, very quickly, because I want to move to today's topic. The first for today is, as I mentioned, the Rishonim who try to take a totally naturalistic approach to Hashem's intervention. Namely, the Rishonim who maintain that a person always has freedom and free will, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu never takes it away, not even as Rambam or Ramban describe. One illustration of this is the Akedas Yitzchak of Yitzchak Arama, towards the bottom of page 3. As I mentioned, the Meiri and the Chibur Atshuva also take such an approach, as does Rav Sadia Gaon. But we'll look at the Akedas Yitzchak. Lo shemana mimenu darki Atshuva biyadayim chas v'shalom. El shenasan lo makom litos ulis kashos al yedei shehevi amakos beseder zeh achar zeh velo kulon biachad vegam nasan revach bein kolachas achas dal derech haba letamei poschen lo. So, very fascinating idea. It's perhaps textually a little bit difficult, but when you read the story, this week's parsha, last week's parsha, one of the things that you see is that, you know, Paro wants to free the Jews, and perhaps in the middle of the suffering, he even agrees, and then he changes his mind. Well, what allowed him to change his mind? The fact that there was a harvacha, the fact that the plagues weren't one right after another, but there was a break of 3 weeks or so in between each plague. Moreover, he didn't give him all 10 plagues at once, but they were just a little bit at a time. In other words, the plagues were delivered in such a way that allowed Paro to keep on changing his mind and insist on keeping the Jews. And that's what it means that Hashem hardened Paro's heart. He allowed him to, he administered the Makos in a way that allowed him the ability to insist on keeping the Jews. Again, other variations of this approach are found in the Miri, Rasadion, but all of them hold that despite the simple reading of the Psukim, it's absolutely inconceivable that a Kodesh Baruch Hu would even intervene in the decision-making process of a human being. The final approach that, again, we're not going to read inside is the Maharal. You have it over here. I'll summarize the basic idea, but again, I encourage you all to read it inside. The Maharal raises a very interesting question. He's primarily dealing with the issue of tshuva and the idea that tshuva is something that's always available for us, and yet it seems to have been taken away from Paro. The Maharal is in the Sivat Tshuva, and he's addressing also the question of why is tshuva even possible. It doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. Shouldn't be able to turn back the clock, that if I did the wrong thing, so as a human being, I should be held responsible for my decisions. How could it be that tshuva ever really is a possibility? And the answer that the Maharal says is remarkable. He says tshuva is possible because we can say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you know, this isn't, those actions, those deeds, those inappropriate deeds that I did, don't reflect who I really am. Don't reflect who I really am. The real me wants to do what's right. So how do I explain those averos? I was overcome by passion, by desire, but that's not who I am. And therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, please see me as I am, judge me as I am. The real me is someone who wants to do that which is right. And of course, saying that's not enough, but if you mean it and you go through the process of tshuva, of aziva sachet and charat and kabbalah ban and the like, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu looks at you as you are, and he sees those actions as sort of not reflecting who you are. You were taken over, and the like. And you know, this is certainly an idea that I think we all feel when we do tshuva. I think most of us certainly want to do what's right. Yeah. Oftentimes we don't always act in the way that we feel we should, and that is why tshuva is possible. Now, the Maharal says, well, let's say a person, they sin not because they're overcome by passion or desire or temptation, but because they've thought about the matter and they've come to conclusion that evil is really the proper path. That's who they are. It's not that they want to do what's good, but they've been overcome, but that's who they are. So Maharal says then, by definition, tshuva is impossible. Because you can't say that's not the real me. That is the real you. You weren't overcome by desire. You made this decision to follow this path. So the Maharal explains that after Paro continued to refuse to allow the Jews to leave after the first, second, third, fourth plague, it was clear after all those refusals that his choice of evil wasn't just desire, passion, but it reflected who he really was. And therefore, tshuva is impossible. Now, I assume Mao would agree that going forward, you could always change. But the notion of sort of rewriting the past, of redefining those actions, saying those aren't who I really was, those were acts of passion, is not something that's available. I gave you a footnote at the bottom of page 3 and 4. Again, now's not the time to go into it too much, but I think it's an interesting point, which is that in modern society, there might be a little bit of a paradigm shift about this question in terms of who expresses who we really are. Are we are what we think, like the Maharal was suggesting, and like even traditionally philosophers have always said, or no? Should one assume that living out your passions and desires is a reflection of yourself. It's an important thing to think about in terms of a lot of the contemporary issues. But again, I'd like to get to today's topic. But yes, let me take your question first.
Going back to Myron Oliver's site, if what he said is that Paro continuously choosing to do what's bad, even though knowing in theory what would be good, wouldn't that make Paro then irrational and then negate the Bechira being a useful tool for him? I mean, if he just chooses things arbitrarily,
so it's not arbitrary. It's the way that I think the Maharal is presenting it is, it's a philosophy of evil. In other words, tshuva is possible. Tshuva in the sense of, again, rewriting the past, is when I really want to do what's right, and I'm overcome by desire. And I could say then, it doesn't reflect who I am. On the other hand, if I don't choose evil because I'm overcome by passion or desire, but because from a sichli perspective, that's the way the Maharal puts it, a sichli perspective, an intellectual perspective, I choose that path. So then that's treated something very differently. Lamashal, maybe this isn't a perfect mashal, but a number of the Mefarshim explain why Sdom, Anshei Sdom, were so evil and therefore treated so harshly. You know, it's one thing to like your own possessions, like your money, like your time, and not to do chesed because you're a little selfish, right? Okay, I see someone who needs some stock. I feel bad for them maybe, but in the end of the day, you know, I like myself a little better, so I'd rather keep the money for myself. That's one thing. Obviously, the Torah wants us to be generous, but that's one madrega. There's another madrega. The madrega of the people of Sdom had a philosophical opposition to chesed. That's why we call it midas Sdom. Midas Sdom is someone who refuses to help someone else even when it's ze nene v'ze lo chaser. Meaning to say that it's sort of a philosophical approach, I don't know, survival of the fittest, you know, whoever, the weak should just be weeded out by helping anybody who's needy. You're just prolonging their existence. It was a philosophical approach. Shaliv shalcha shalcha, that's also wrong. It's not just not doing chesed because I like myself better, but it's not doing chesed because there's a philosophical objection to helping others. That was the meat of stone, and that's treated very differently. So in the case of Paro, his refusal in the face of this obvious demonstration of God's existence, even after Makas Kinim, his Chartumim said, Etzbelo Kimhi, and still Paro refuses. He doesn't bend. He chooses a path of fighting God. It's not just that he did it because this is the easier path. It wasn't just a sin of passion, but it was a philosophical decision. Yodea Boro Miskavin Limrod Bo. And then you can't excuse yourself by saying it didn't reflect who I really was. Yeah.
Right, but what it meaning is already saying, and that means that the issue is that you can't like attribute it to the goof or something like that. It's a sickly type of like philosophical orientation. Mm-hmm. But if it's an irrational one, wouldn't that also be not sickly?
No. It's maybe we'd say it's wrong. It's wrong, but Paro had Bechira. In other words, there's, again, I think what the Maharal is saying is Bechira could be expressed in two ways. Bechira could be expressed as it is, I think, for most of us, most of the time, whereby our Bechira is whether we give into our passions. But fundamentally, we know what's right and we want to do what's right. And then a person could say, look, as a sichli person, that doesn't reflect who I am. Or Bechira could be expressed in choosing evil from a sichli perspective, from a philosophical perspective. And in that case, tshuva is by definition not an option. And that's what the Maharal is saying. Let's take a look. I guess once we spent this much time, just read it inside the last page. V'amru tashuvu l'tochachti. This is a pasuk from Mishlei that he's explaining. Ratzalomar ki mitzvos haTorah omeres l'chotim shiyashuvu l'kayim v'lishmor mitzvos haTorah af shechatu mischayv lahem shiyashuvu. V'kasher yashuvu achotim al Hashem Yisbarach mekamam tshuva. V'af im hayu chotim b'meizit hayu mischayv min haTorah shiyesh lahem tshuva. Ki haTorah shi sichlis l'gamri v'adam eno sichli rak hu ba'al guf. V'ilu haya adam ba'al seichel l'gamri v'chata. If a person was purely sichli, then tshuva wouldn't be an option. That type of charata is possible because we sometimes don't act using our seichel. As yikruuni velo ana yishachrunani velo yimtzauni uva medrash amrav yochanan mipan, and then he continues. The medrash uses this pasuk to explain Paro's lack of tshuva. Right, af Paro rasha kevin sheshigar kadosh baruch hu chamisha pamim velo ishkiach al dvarav amar la kadosh baruch hu ataik sheis arpecha mechbadet az livcha reini mosif lchatum al tumascha v'chol ze kasher hisra lashuv velo shav. As a choti as a nechshav mitzad sichlo, v'shuv ein shuva l'davar zeh. L'chach amar az yikreuni v'lo ene, ki kasher masra Hashem Yisbarach ba'adim shiyashav v'lo shav, HaKadosh Baruch Hu no l'fan of Pesach tshuva achar kach. That's the way he's explaining the story of Paro.
I think, from the example that he gives of somebody who sins and then refuses to do tshuva multiple times, that would imply less of a, he's choosing a philosophy of evil and more of like a, he's so...
So that could be. In other words, that is another approach that some of the Mefarshim take to Paro, and the hardening of his heart and his lack of freedom is almost like it was a naturalistic loss of freedom. Nasaloka Hatter, right? He was so far down this path, he felt he couldn't dig himself out. That's the Meiri's approach. But he's saying the opposite. He's saying that when shown in an incontrovertible way that the easier path is to release the Jews, after being warned so many times, you can't just say, oh, I was overcome. That's a reflection of an intellectual decision. You've decided, in a sense, to do this because this is what you think is right. It's sichli. You can't just say it's passion anymore, and then put tshuva by definition is impossible. That's the way I understand the Maharal.
So
wouldn't
it be like a shechat type of like?
Yeah. Did you have a question? No?
I was just wondering what the hardening of the heart is according to the Maharal.
I assume the inability to do tshuva, or for tshuva to be effective. Yes?
In a sense, Maharal chose a philosophy, and then the Rosh Hashanah blocked him into that philosophy.
I don't think, or since he chose his philosophy, tshuva by definition is impossible.
I mean, while he has a philosophy, he could theoretically change his philosophy.
Yeah, that's fine. You can't rewrite the past, exactly. In other words, tshuva in terms of retroactively erasing that which you did is impossible. Yes?
So I understand that for hardening the hurt, but there's two hardenings. There's his hardening and then Hashem's hardening. I mean, if you wanted to say philosophy, you should have said the whole time that he himself hardened his heart.
I assume the Maharal would say that at that point tshuva was still possible. Hashem's hardening implies that that tshuva... Yeah. Okay. Obviously, again, you know, going through these numerous pshatim we considered, textually some of them are easier than others. I think what's so important is what they teach us... in terms of nature of tshuva, the nature of bechira, and the like. Okay, fine. So we'll stop here in terms of that, and we'll turn to today's topic. So I appreciate all the suggestions that everybody had for topics in terms of this semester. And Be'ezras Hashem, we'll do a lot of the suggestions that were made. I mean, if I did all of them, we'd go on till the next couple of years. But I'll try to pick the ones that were most suggested. They include especially things like Torah Misinai and the evolution of Torah, what was invented, what was given. There's also Hashkacha, a lot of requests for that, so Be'ezras Hashem will do that. And then a number of people also suggested that they prefer the shiurim that are like single units, not ones that go from week to week. It gets too long. But the problem is that it's hard to do these big, giant topics like Hashkacha in 1 week. So it's a little bit of a stira, perhaps. But what I'm going to try to do is perhaps break them up into units. So I thought today we would start with the nature of the Mesorah. And instead of maybe trying to do the topic very broadly, like look today at the approach of the Rambam and the Ran and the Ikrim, all on this topic, we'll just choose one thinker, and today we'll do the Rambam, and we'll focus on, I guess we only have a little more than a half hour left, but we'll focus on the Rambam's Mahalech of the evolution of Torah, what was given at Sinai and what developed later. We'll try to understand what we can of the Rambam today, and then next time, Be'ezras Hashem, will perhaps continue the topic, but we'll look at another perspective, another Mahalech, another thinker, and hopefully we won't, which was have 2 minutes of leftovers for a half hour. So if you if you turn to the sheets that I gave out today, there are more copies, I think, floating around somewhere. I don't know where. So let's start. So the question that we want to begin with, a question I think many people, that's not it.
Oh, not it.
That many people wonder about is what was given at Sinai, what came later. We all know that there are statements in Chazal that seem to imply absolutely everything was given at Sinai. We also know, even before we get to the Rambam and the Mefarshim, that something that's very hard to square with what we see when we learn Gemara, for example, where there seems to be chidushim developed, questions, uncertainties, resolutions. How do we understand the development of machlokas? Were the machlokos coming from Sinai? How do we understand the notion of a chiddush? Is there such a thing as a chiddush? So again, today we're going to work on the Rambam. The first source you have over here is the Rambam from the Minyan HaMitzvos. He is quoting a statement in Chazal that we're all familiar with. What we need to figure out is how he understands the statement in Chazal. Elu Haim Sheish, this is could be found at the beginning of the Mishneh Torah, in other words, in Sefer Amada, at the beginning, before the actual presentation of the Halachos. There's a list of mitzvos, all Taryag mitzvos, and after listing those Taryag mitzvos, he writes like this: Elu Haim Sheish Meos V'Shalosh Esrei Mitzvos Shenamru Lo L'Moshe B'Sinai Hein V'klalosehen u'pratosehen v'dikdukehen. These are the 613 mitzvot that were given to Moshe at Sinai. They, their general principles, and their details. V'chol osan haklalos v'apratos v'adikdukim v'habiurin shel kol mitzvah hi Torah shebal peh shekiblu based in Mipi based in. So these rules, these details, these parameters were transmitted based in from based in. Moshe kibal Torah Messina, Mitzvah Eliyoshua, etc., all the way down through the Beis Din of each and every generation. If you were to stop here, certainly, again, he's quoting a statement in Chazal over here, but certainly the impression you get is that every single detail of every single mitzvah was given at Sinai. Not necessarily dinim derabanan. In fact, the continuation of this Rambam talks about dinim derabanan, v'yesh mitzvah sacheros sheneschadshu achar matan Torah v'kavulos hanavim v'chachamim u'pashtu b'chol Yisrael kigon mikra megillah Chanukah, etc. But at least with respect to dinim deoraisa, every detail of every din deoraisa was given to Moshe at Sinai. That's what the Rambam would seem to be suggesting over here. Now, among other things that would imply that drashos, assuming they're real drashos, not asmachtos, but real drashos, are all from Sinai. Or at least, I don't know if it says that. The halachos were from Sinai. The drashos could have been said subsequently to explain a halacha that was known, but every detail of every mitzvah d'oraisa was from Sinai. That's what it's implied. And if you were to have a machlokas about any din d'oraisa, that machlokas must have been a result of forgetting. Because if every detail was given at Sinai, then any machlokas must be a result of shechicha. We'll see that's not the Rambam's view, and so we have to try to figure out. But just start somewhere. So starting from this particular source, that's the impression that I would get. Let's turn now to that same volume, the Mishneh Torah, and we're going to read from the Hakdama to the Rambam's Mishneh Torah. And again, this is also could be found in every Mishneh Torah, Chelek Aleph. We're not going to read the whole thing. I didn't even give you the whole thing. It goes on after. This is a very important text, but we'll start at the very least. Kol ha-mitzvos shenitnu lo le-Moshe b'Sinai b'feirushan nitnu. So all mitzvos that were given to Moshe at Sinai were given with their interpretation. Shenemar, Vetna lacha es luchos ha'aven v'atorah v'amitzvos. It's a pasuk, Shmos Chav Daled, describing what Hashem gave Moshe at Sinai. It says he gave him luchos ha'aven, Torah and mitzvos. So the Rambam now tells you what this pasuk means. Luchos is pretty straightforward. Torah zutor shebechsav. U'mitzvah ze perusha. V'tzivanu la'asos ha-Torah al-pi ha-mitzvah. So the word Torah refers to Torah Shebachsav. The word mitzvah refers to the interpretation of that Torah. And Hashem commanded us to follow the Torah according to the mitzvah, according to the interpretation. U'mitzvah zuhi nikreis Torah Shebachsav. So mitzvah is basically a reference to the Torah Shebachsav, namely the interpretation of the Torah Shebachsav. Now, when he says Torah Shebachsav over here, presumably doesn't mean the entire text of the Torah. It seems inconceivable that the entire text of the Torah was given at Sinai to Moshe. Among other things, it would be pretty strange if Moshe had read about the Parsha of Mei Meriva and then messed up whatever you think he did wrong. Many other, things don't make any sense, like his davening to Hashem already after having read that Hashem's going to not listen and he's going to die in the Midbar, right? So I think it's inconceivable. There's famously a debate in the Gemara whether Torah was Megillah Nitna or Chasuma Nitna. Both positions take for granted, though, that the text of the Torah was not given at Sinai. The text was either given entirely at the end or in installments. I imagine the Torah Shebichsav that he's referring to here is the Torah Shebichsav until that point, I guess, through Parshas Yisro or Mishpatim or the like. But it's not, it's certainly not the, I imagine, the entire Torah. In other words, not the Chamisha Chumshe Torah given to Moshe at Sinai. Now, yeah?
Could you be saying that the mitzvot were contained within Torah Shabbat?
So it could be. It could be. And that is another possibility, which I was thinking of. The question is, let me say why I think you might be right, but why I'm troubled with that. We always say, when we say Torah is given at Sinai, so we mean the mitzvos, I think, like you're saying, not the text of the Torah. The text of the Torah was not given to us in completion until after the 40 years. We mean the mitzvos. And the Rambam's elaborating on that and saying not just the mitzvos, but mitzvos and perushim. So if that's correct, what you're suggesting, then it's a little bit funny. Because Torah Shebichtav, clearly the Rambam sounds like he means something written, right? It would be strange to say he gave us the Torah Shebichtav orally. It could be. But it sounds like it's something written. So that means, well, what was written? In other words, that's like what you're saying, a document that we don't have. It's like the halachic portions of the Torah, even, but not the text. I don't know.
Right, but the problem with it, if you're not saying that, then all the pasuk is really saying is that you have to, that Chazal used this as a reference to say that, everything was given at Har Sinai.
So clearly it means the mitzvos. In other words, I agree with you that the Rambam is saying over here that Torah and mitzvos were given. The question is, what is the exact meaning of the phrase Torah Shebichtav? But let's keep this question open, and let's keep the question open as we go through the Rambam. We're going to see a number of formulations of this in the Rambam, and we'll see if we could look for a clue. Now, the Rambam over here in interpreting this pasuk is coming off of Chazal. Those of you who are doing Daf Yomi, it's not too long ago. It's a Gemara in Brachos on Daf Hamad Aleph. But the Gemara says it a little differently. The Gemara says, Amar Reish Lakish Mai Dechsiv Vetna Lecha Es Haluchos Ha'Even Va'Torah Va'Mitzvos Asher Kasavti Lo Rosam Luchos Elu Aseres HaDibros Torah Zumikra Ve'Hamitzva Zumishna Asher Kasavti Elu Neviim Uksuvim Lahorasam Zagimara Milamed Shekulam Nitnulamai. So Rambam and the Gemara both seeing in this pasuk the idea of Torah and mitzvos, including the interpretation coming from Sinai. Except the Gemara says v'hamitzvah zu mishnah. The Rambam said v'hamitzvah zu perusha, right? U'mitzvah zu perusha. In other words, the perusha, the Torah, or the parish of the mitzvos. So either the Rambam is translating the Gemara, meaning to say, when the Gemara says the hamitzvah zu mishnah, it doesn't mean mishnah like, mishnayas. Mishnah means the interpretation of the mitzvos. In other words, the Torah Shebaal Peh. That's what the Rambam is saying. Probably, the Rambam isn't exactly quoting this Gemara. And maybe the Rambam would say that we shouldn't read this Gemara so literally either. We'll get back to that a little later. But the Rambam is explaining the Pshuto Shel Mikra over here. The Rambam very frequently in Mishneh Torah, and it's an interesting question. Why? Does it relate to his machlokas, with the Karaites, or perhaps a more fundamental reason in terms of the importance of Pshuto Shel Mikra? But the Rambam frequently tries to show in Mishneh Torah how halachos emerge from the text of the Torah in a way that sometimes differ than Chazal. It's not at all uncommon that Chazal will learn a halacha in a certain way, they'll make a certain drash, and the Rambam, when quoting that, will give a different interpretation, one which is oftentimes far more rooted in the text, more closer to pshat. And that's what the Rambam is doing over here as well. So it's very similar to what the Gemara does, but not exactly the same. And what he's saying is, al pi pshat, what does ve'etna luchas luchos ha'aven v'atorah v'mitzvah mean? Torah is the Torah shebichsav, mitzvah is perusha, is the interpretation of the Torah. Now again, like in the first source, we see the Rambam emphasizing that the interpretation of the mitzvos, the halachos, are coming from Sinai. It's not just that which is in the text of the Torah, but also the interpretation. Yeah.
Doesn't this make sense with the way the Rambam interprets the term of shlish b'mikra, shlish
b'mishnah? Yes, it's totally consistent. I agree. That was sort of what I was getting at in terms of his interpretation of the Gemara. I was just adding, though, that the Hemshech of the Gemara, regardless, he doesn't quote. In other words, Asher Kasavti Elu Nevi'im Uksuvim L'Horasam, right? So, but I agree with that. I agree with that. Now, okay, good. So far, so good. The Rambam is consistent over here. Let's continue in section base. These divisions are just, they're not the Rambam's divisions, but they're helpful. Kol HaTorah, Ksava Moshe Rabbeinu Kodem Shiyamos. So the text of the Torah here, clearly we're talking about the text, was written by Moshe before he died, Bechsav Yado, V'nasan Sefer L'chol Shevet V'Shevet, V'Sefer Achad Nisanu Ba'aron Laid. Shenemar lakoch es sefer haTorah hazeh v'samtem ba'aron oso mitzad aron bris Hashem v'hayasham l'cha b'chal eid. So the text of the Torah, the Rambam clarifies over here, was written down before his death. V'amitzvah shipei rosh haTorah. What about that? Lo ksava, it wasn't written down. Elitziva bal is Kanim v'liyoshua u'lishar kol Yisrael shenemar eis kol adavar sher nochi mitzaveh eschem oso tishmeru lasos u'mepnei zeh nikreis Torah Shebal Peh. So this mitzvah is what we call the Torah Shebal Peh. So the Torah Shebichsav was given at Sinai. The Torah Shebal Peh was given at Sinai. But the Torah Shebal Peh remained oral. The Torah Shebal Peh is, again, the interpretation of the mitzvos, the halachos, the diktukim, the pratim, and that remained oral. Afal pi shalom nichtava Torah Shebal Peh limda Moshe Rabbeinu kula beveis dino l'shivim zakenim v'la'lazer u'pinchas Yeshua l'shlashton kiblu mimoshe l'Yeshua shu talmido shalom Moshe Rabbeinu master Torah Shebal Peh v'tzivo alav v'chein Yeshua kol yamei chayav Limit al pen. The Rambam over here actually continues. We're not going to read it. The Shalshelas Hamasora, all the way from Moshe Rabbeinu through Chazal, and he goes through each and every generation, and he tells you who is Moser to who, and who is. I mean, like he said over here, there are many Makabli and Masora, but who are the primary transmitters of the Masora? The Rambam actually spells out each and every generation. As he continues in this Mishnah Torah. Now, the Rambam over here, of course, writes that originally the oral law, the Torah Shebal Peh, had to remain oral. There was an isser, a prohibition to transcribe the oral law. The Rambam, in a very interesting way, I don't know if we'll have time to see it today, but describes how it was taught, meaning to say that it wasn't entirely oral, in the sense that people could take notes so they wouldn't forget. It just couldn't be transmitted orally. There's a big machlokas Rishonim about this question exactly. What was written down before Reb Yehuda Nasi came and wrote down the Mishnayos? But for now, that's I think not our focus. The point, though, is that it remained oral. Until Reb Yehuda Nasi came and wrote it down, and the Rambam explains why he did that. I think we talked about that earlier in the year. He saw that the Torah is being forgotten, and this was necessary to ensure that we wouldn't forget the oral law. The Rambam in the Mor Nevuchim, in Chelek Aleph, chapter 61, writes about why it was so important that the oral law remain oral. Why was there a prohibition against the writing of it down? And the Rambam writes, I'll just read you a little bit from this, I didn't give it to you. Even the traditional law, as you're aware, was not originally committed to writing in conformity with the rule to which our nation adhered. Dvarim shebalpeta rishai lemostran bechsav. With reference to the law, this rule was very opportune. For while it remained in force, it averted the evils which happened subsequently, namely, the great diversity of opinion, doubts as to meaning of the written words, slips of the pen, disseminations among the people, formations of new sects, confusing notions about practical subjects. It's actually very interesting. The Rambam writes that this confusion and diversity of opinion was a result of writing it down. Now, the diversity of opinions actually started well before Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi wrote down the Mishnah. And it's an interesting question what he means. But in a certain sense, there was a much more of a formal process of transmission and therefore resolution of uncertainty. There are other approaches to why this is, but this is what the Rambam writes in Maran Vuchim at the very least. So, again, from what we've seen so far, you would get the impression that that everything was, all details were given to Moshe at Sinai. Now, the next source you have over here is from the Hakdama to Perek HaChelek, the Yud Gimel Ikar Emuna, the Yisod HaShmini. Again, there's a lot to talk about here, especially in terms of what the Rambam means when he says, Shekol HaTorah Zu HaNimtzeis B'Yadenu Hayom Hi HaTorah Shenitna LeMoshe. The Rambam presumably would concede, Ein Anu B'Kiyum B'Chaseiros V'Yaseiros, what that means. But what's relevant, again, for us and today's discussion is the Rambam emphasizes, turn to top towards the top, page 2, where it's bolded, V'chein Perusha, HaMekubal Gamhu M'Pi HaGvura. So the Rambam emphasizes that the interpretation of the Torah Shebaal Peh, as we've been seeing, is part of the, is also from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This too is among the Yud Gimel Ikar Emuna. In other words, Yud Gimel Ikar Emuna is that both the Torah Shebechsav and the Torah Shebaal Peh are from HaKadosh Baruch Hu through Moshe. Now, even though from what we've seen so far, you might get the impression that every single detail of every single law is from Moshe Rabbeinu, Mipi HaGvura, that's not the case. And even though the Rambam quotes Chazal, and he says, Klaloseha, Pratoseha, Dikdukeha came from Moshe and Misinai, the Rambam limits this. And the Rambam says not everything, not every detail was given to Moshe. In fact, many details were discovered subsequently. So the Rambam writes, take a look at the next source here. This is from Sefer HaMitzvos, Shoresh Sheni. In the Shrashim of the Sefer HaMitzvos, the Rambam is trying to figure out what should be included and excluded from the Minyan HaMitzvos, what should be counted towards the 613. Why that's important is another very interesting question, but again, we'll leave that for now. So he's telling us the rules, and the Rambam writes, in Shor Sheni, Shein Rayu Limnos, Koma Shalemedim Ba'achas Miyud Gimel Midos Ome Riboy. We shouldn't include things that were derived from Midos Shatar Nedreshes Ben, or some other type of drasha, like a Riboy. And a little later, Hine Lo Kol Ma Shenimtza L'Chachamim Shehotzi Behekesh Mishalosh Esrei Midos Nemar Shehu Nemar L'Moshe Misinai. So not everything that was given to not everything that was given to that we learn from the midos shatar nedrashas bahen was given to Moshe at Sinai. The midos might have been given to Moshe at Sinai, but the applications, not necessarily. Not necessarily. And even though we would generally call those dinim deoraisa, now we should note, by the way, and again, today we don't have time to figure this out, this relates to the Rambam's very interesting usage of the word medivrei sofrim. Medivrei sofrim for the Rambam doesn't just mean derabanan. Rambam famously calls Kiddushe Kesef, among other things, divrei sofrim. And what the Rambam means by medivrei sofrim is a very important discussion that's related to this. We're not going to do that now. But the Rambam is telling us that things that, again, I'll say what we would call dinim de'oraisa, what we would call dinim de'oraisa, interpretations of Torah law, they were not necessarily given to Moshe at Sinai. And this is clear in many places. The Rambam, look, for example, the Rambam in the beginning of Hilchos Mamrim, Perak Aleph, where he talks about the idea that drashos and the like were oftentimes discovered, and as such, they were debated. Because this brings us to another principle of the Rambam, which is that any matter which is debated does not come from Sinai. Anything that comes from Sinai, there is no debate. The Rambam understands that the Masorah from Sinai is perfect. He disagrees strongly with the view of the Gaonim. The Gaonim understand that really everything came from Sinai, and when you find debate, it's because there was Shikcha. The Rambam says that's wrong, the Masorah is strong. The Rambam stresses his position in such a forceful way that there are a number of things which are quite perplexing according to the Rambam, which perhaps, again, we'll get back to a little bit later. But the Rambam says that whenever you see a debate, that means it's not from Sinai. And even though we have many debates with respect to, again, what we would call dinim d'oraisa, that means that though they're dinim d'oraisa in the sense that these are divine laws and not humanly legislated laws, but their derivation was not given to Moshe. Everything Moshe got, he transmitted, according to the Rambam, and that wasn't forgotten. So when you have debate, it's about something that was discovered later. Everything, in a certain sense, of course, goes back to Moshe Mi-Sinai, but only in a certain sense, in the sense that it's rooted in the Torah Shebichtav, or it's rooted in the Torah Shebaal Peh that was given at Sinai. But it doesn't mean every single din was given at Sinai. And the place where the Rambam really spells this out most clearly is in his Hakdama to Beresha Mishnah, which we'll read now. But before we get into the details, so what then does the Rambam mean when he said, when he said in the first source that we saw that at Sinai was Nimsar to Moshe Klolosehen Upratosehen Vidiktukehen, if there were halachos that were discovered subsequently, what does it mean Klolosehen Upratosehen Vidiktukehen? So the Rambam answers this question. And the Rambam tells us that it doesn't mean every detail of every mitzvah. It means the Torah Shebaal Peh. It means Halach L'Moshe Mi-Sinai and Perush Mekubal and the like. Not every single detail. When Hashem told Moshe Rabbeinu, Basukos Teshvu Shivas Yomim, he said, what's a sukkah? Sukkah is a booth with walls and tzchach sun that grows on the ground and whatever it is. And when he said Totafos, he told him, these are black boxes that have four parshios, etc., etc. But there are many details. In fact, all the details debated in the whole of Talmud that were not given. Many drashos, not given. Not klosein upratosein v'diktukein, says the Rambam, doesn't mean every prat and every diktuk. It means the basic understanding and application of the law. And the Rambam writes this explicitly, as we'll see in a moment. So let's read together in the remaining time the Hakdama to Perish HaMishnah. V'zeh ikur, yesh l'chalamot al sodo, v'hu Sheperushim ha-mekubalim epi Moshe, ein machlokes bahem b'shum panim. There is never any debate about perush ha-mekubal, a received interpretation. Sharei me'az ve'ad ata, lo matzanu machlokes an menazmanim. Mi'emos Moshe ve'ad Rav Ashi ben ha-chachamim. Kidei sh'yomar echad ha-motzi ayin me'chavero, Yotziu es eino. Shinam ayin ba'ayin. The Yomar Sheni, no. Eino ela kofir bilvad shechayiv lasis. Now, it's actually quite remarkable that he gave that example, because isn't there Gemara in Bava Kama where Rav Lazar seems to say ayin tachas ayin mamish? Now, even though he doesn't say it means you pluck out the guy's eye, but there is a machloka. So we could maybe get back to that. I think not today. But the Rambam over here is basically telling us a very, very important yesod. First of all, there's a bit of terminology which he clarifies a little bit later. The Rambam basically classifies five categories of halachos. The first one is Perush Mekubal, and the second is Halacha L'Moshe Misinai. Perush Mekubal and Halacha L'Moshe Misinai are very similar to each other. The only difference is whether or not there's a textual element. Meaning to say, Perush Mekubal is like the example that he just said, a interpretation of a pasuk. When the pasuk says, Ayin tachas ayin, what does that mean? It means mamon. When the Torah says, Pri Eitz Hadar, what does that mean? Does it mean a beautiful fruit? It means an esrog. That's a Perush HaMekubal. How do we know that? How do we know that Perush that Pri Eitz Hadar means esrog? Kabbalah. Now in both of those examples that I just gave, the Gemara actually has a whole back and forth trying to figure it out. How do we know Ayin Tachas Ayin is mamon, not mamish? There's all these different theories in the Gemara. Some are accepted, some aren't. Same thing with the Arba Minim. Rambam says those are asmachtas. The Gemara over there didn't really like open up and say, I wonder what a Pri Eitz Hadar is. Anybody have any ideas? And different people said different things. No, we started off with something that we knew. We know that the Pri Eitz Hadar is an Esro. We know that because it's a Perush Mekubal. And the Gemara is trying to say, can you find any type of allusion to it in the Psukim? Usually when we think of Asmachta, we think of a allusion to a din d'rabbanan in the text, and that's one type of asmachta. But another type of asmachta is an allusion to a halacha mosh misina or a perish mekubal in the text. But it's not the meaning of the text, and it's not the basis of our knowledge. That's a perish mekubal. Halacha mosh misina is also an oral tradition, but it's not an oral tradition about a interpretation of a word or phrase in the pasuk, but rather an oral tradition about something that's totally non-textual. Like the Gemara says, chatzitzos or shiurim are halach l'moshe misinai. The shiur for matzah is a kezias, right? It's not like there's a pasuk that there's a mesorah for, that's what it means, you know. You should eat matzah, and the perush mekubal of that pasuk is kezias. No, the shiur of matzah is halach l'moshe misinai, that's a kezias. That's what, and the Rambam beautifully reads the Gemara Brachos, in terms of that. So that's the first type. So the first two categories are both oral traditions. Both of them were clearly given at Sinai. We'll skip the third for a moment. When we talk about the fourth and the fifth, those are also very straightforward. Fourth is Gzeros. Fifth are Takanos and Minhagim. Gzeros are basically meant to protect the mitzvos, to make sure we don't violate the halacha, susyag l'Torah. Takanos minhagim are to better society and the like. Again, the differences between gzeros, takanos minhagim are an interesting discussion. The root of them is also from the psukim. In other words, our obligation to follow them comes from the Torah Shebichtav. Asisa kol sheyirucha, according to the Rambam, is a real drasha. Lo sasam nedavah sheyirucha yiminu smol. So we understand categories 1 and 2. That's truly from Sinai. Categories 4 and 5, man-made legislation. Number 3 is what's most interesting in the Rambam, and that's where we find debate. And those are things like drashos and riboy and miut and the like. Those are things that are made up. Hence, there's debate. They're made up, but they're the interpretation of the text. So they have the status of a divine law, but they are not, there's no Mesorah about them. They weren't coming from Sinai. Rather, at Sinai we were given the tools how to make these, like the Midos HaTorah Nedrash HaSban, but the application of those Midos, that was done oftentimes throughout the generations. When you have a Gemara and the Gemara quotes a halacha and quotes a drasha, you know, is the, what came first? The drasha? The halacha or the drasha? Did we learn the halacha from the drasha? Or did we know the halacha and we look for a drasha? According to Rambam, yesh v'yesh. Yesh v'yesh. And how do you know? It's not always obvious, but sometimes you'll know. If there's a machlokes, you'll know that it was something that came later. So that's bekitzer, the approach of the Rambam. Fratosem v'diktukem were given at Sinai, but that means perush mekubal. That means halach l'mosh mi-Sinai. Many details and many of the laws were given at Sinai. But many details were discovered later. So there is room, of course, for chidush. And there is room for new understandings, new interpretations in the Torah. And because God gave that koach to humans, that's the responsibility of the Sanhedrin HaGadol, who are the guarantors of the halach of the Torah Shebaal Peh. So naturally, there's room for discovery and at the same time, of course, room for debate. Okay, so next week, Baz Hashem, we'll pick up with someone else. I'm not sure what yet, but we'll continue this topic, but maybe a different mahalich. Everyone should have a wonderful day and a good Shabbos. Thank you.